Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Royal Blue Podcast. It is the Monday Royal Blue Podcast, and I'm your host, Ian Crawl. And today, I'm joined by the Echo's Evan, a sea reporter, home and away, Joe Thomas. Joe, how are things? Evan, free weekend, what did you do?
Well, I worked.
Okay.
and I got some sleep, and I enjoyed things like other teams' failed to take opportunities. It's weird, isn't it? It felt like the easiest weekend we've had in ages. I felt like the best weekend we've had in ages. I wrote my post-Man United match report was maybe this team just needs a break without playing, because if it's not playing, it can't damage itself. And this weekend was testament to that, I think. Felt like actually a pretty good weekend. Felt like the best case scenario really for Everton. And I think with the results that went and, you know, why, yeah, as a result of that, not having to, you know, watch them extend an unbeaten sort of run without a win or anything like that will just infuriate us anymore was probably, you know, a positive, I think.
Okay, well, we're also joined by Echo Sports reporter Matt Jones. Matt Jones, Everton free weekend, what did you do?
It was my daughter's first birthday this weekend.
Oh, amazing.
So we went to a farm on, it's a windmill farm on Friday, and then she had a party on Saturday. And it was my mum's birthday yesterday, so non-stop. So I didn't really think about Everton at all.
Jam-packed weekend
for you. It was absolutely wonderful, yeah. Very nice.
Okay, well, congratulations. Happy birthday to your daughter. The agenda today, we're obviously going to talk about the slap heard around the Algarve. Just touch on that a little bit. We've got to talk about it. I know it was, you know, over the weekend. It is Monday. We will talk about it a little bit. Joe's written a couple of pieces on that, and we'll get his thoughts, and we'll get Matt's thoughts as well. We'll also look at the weekend's results, which obviously benefited Everton quite a bit. And then it's going to be a big week. It's going to be points deduction chaos expected. Joe, another piece that you've written and a headline centred on that. So that's pretty much the agenda. We are live, YouTube and Facebook, so please get your questions in, get your comments in. I'll put them to the lads, and we'll see what we can do. We'll see if we can answer them. But yeah, I mean, you know, Joe, first of all, have you ever been in the Algarve? Have you ever been to Portugal?
I've been to Portugal. I've been to Lisbon. I've not been to the Algarve.
No.
Lisbon, phenomenal city.
It is, yeah. That wasn't when Everton played in Benfica, was it?
No, it wasn't.
No, I went to Lisbon when Everton played Benfica, and we got
5-0.
Smashed 5-0.
Yeah, Coleman debut, wasn't he? Played left back,
yeah.
I think, and Dan Gosling was right back, and it was, I think they were up against Pablo Aimar and Angel Di Maria, so
yeah.
Didn't go well.
Yeah, I quite like Portugal, to be fair. It's always been like a go-to holiday for the Kroll family when we ever go.
I'm a stag do in Lisbon.
No way, did you?
Yeah, it was brilliant, yeah. Very, very hilly. So when you've had a few bevvies, like getting up towards the top end of the town is hard work.
The lactic acid in those cars.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But no, it's an absolutely cracking place.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm quite prone to going to Albufeira, a little place in the Algarve, just in case anyone's interested. Let us know if you've ever been to Portugal. If you've ever been to the Algarve, let us know the best place in Portugal.
If anybody didn't know that we were 1 week into free week for that game.
We've got to talk about Sutton, haven't we?
Yeah.
Okay, let's get down to it then, Joe. I'm just going to read a snippet. I mean, a lot of people obviously know about what happened, but I'm going to read a snippet from the Mail piece, basically, who initially reported this. So, first of all, Everton's training camp in Portugal this week was marred by an altercation between manager Sean Dyche and several of his players. Dyche shocked his squad by aiming a jocular slap at the head of defender Nathan Patterson during the meal. Dyche's intentions were harmless, and it was otherwise a good-natured evening, but the 52-year-old appears to have connected with Patterson more forcefully than he intended to, leaving some players unimpressed. Dyche is understood to have apologised to Patterson. So, Joe, can you shed any more light on this incident and, you know, with the line drawn under it now or over it?
Well, I think the line's been drawn under it, yeah. I think that when... Yeah, in fairness, it was the Mail that broke this story. But when it emerged that Friday night, just as we could get into the weekend, it was the last thing that I wanted to read. I wasn't aware of it before then. And obviously, you know, this still took, 2 days for it to come out. So, I mean, that probably suggests that it wasn't the big blow-up that had agents and players and, you know, all sorts of intermediaries and staff talking about it from the minute that it happened. So I think that's probably a positive sign that we can read into it. But yeah, when it emerged, I was a bit like, oh, no. Again, like I said at the start of this podcast, you know, Everton without football was going pretty well. I think it still is, to be perfectly honest. But yeah, I mean, obviously it was a flashpoint that none of us wanted. But I think it was just pretty much just a misunderstanding, jocular thing that just perhaps was, misjudged perhaps by Dyche. And, you know, I think there was an obviously immediate reaction, but I think it calmed down pretty well. And I think that if you spoke to multiple parties in relation to this, and I don't think there's any lingering resentment or anything like that. I don't think this turned into a big spat, and I don't think this was turned into anything that continued. You know, if you look at, I know the club released images, but obviously the club released lots of images from the campus where they were staying throughout the week, and they include pictures on Thursday, so the day after this was obviously Wednesday night. And there are lots of happy smiling, you know, everyone's there, Nathan Patterson's still in training and he's smiling in photos with everyone. So, you know, I think everybody's moved past it quite well. I don't think it's... I'll be honest, I think when you bear in mind that Luton threw away a 3-goal lead on the same night, I'm not even sure it's the most important thing that happened at Everton's on Everton's Wednesday night, to be honest. But yeah, obviously it's not something that we want to be reading. It's not something we can ask Dyche about for another couple of weeks. I'm sure he'll be great in response to that to him. In fairness, I'm sure it'll be surpassed by other news over the next fortnight before we get into things like the pre-Bournemouth press conference, which is still, 10 days away from now, so until we get to go into that. So, I think probably even more helpfully is if there was anything that needed diffusion, Patson's gone off to join the Scotland team and several of the other players have gone off. I think some of the players will be having a break this week as well from Finch Farm. So there is if there is anything that's lingering, there is every opportunity for it to diffuse before we get back to the high pressure environment that is going to be Finch Farm heading into the last 10 games.
I mean, if it's over, it's over, Matt, then that's fine. But it's obviously not something that you want to see coming out of your football club, regardless of whether it was a jovial, you know, whether it was an accident, whether it was just like say, a joke. What was the first, thing you thought of when you saw it? You know, all we asked for is a 1 week of normality with Everton, isn't it?
It's just, funny, isn't it? I mean, that's just how you've sort of got, like, I don't think I've got room anymore to just be miserable about Everton and... because the form is awful. We've got all this stuff going on off the pitch and the takeover might be happening or might not be happening, and then we've got potential consequences of that either way. So I just sort of laughed when I saw it. And obviously, Joe's follow-up report would indicate it's probably not as serious an event as it was initially reported, but it just feels like one of those things that is probably nothing, but like when things go forward and potentially we're looking back on this season and how much of a catastrophe it's been, it will be rolled into analysis of, well, the signs were there when this happened or when this happened, and it might eventually be made to be more than it is. But I just feel like it's probably one of them where, like, as much as going away on that training camp is meant to be good for morale and helping everybody, build some camaraderie, this squad is small. We've been together for a long time throughout the course of the season. Maybe it would have been better for Everton if it was the international break. Then they had a break and they could do the training, because they all would have had 2 weeks away from each other. Maybe it's just a bit like, Christmas time, where you get sick of the sight of people after a few days. Maybe it's just a bit of that, where everyone is just a bit annoyed The mood's obviously not going to be great, despite what the manager said, because we're playing poorly, we're down the bottom, we've got things hanging over us. It's not surprising. I think things have got a little bit tense, but just one of them. Obviously, we don't know exactly what happened, and we're just going to have to sort of hope and assume that it was just a bit of a flare-up over nothing going forward.
I mean, you know, we weren't there, so we don't know. There's no footage of anything, but Dice clearly read the situation a little bit wrong. Mm. It was a public place. It wasn't something that happened on the training pitch. So, is there any concerns that, you know, he hasn't got the backing of some of the players? You know, I'm just talking about leaks to the press.
Yeah.
Obviously, like I say, it was a public place, so anyone could have seen what happened and obviously just reported it to the press and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think if it happened on the training pitch, then possibly the fact it's happening in the restaurant perhaps mitigates that a little bit.
Yeah.
I think it was a public restaurant, and, you know, I don't want to dive too deep into cliches, but if you're talking about luxury golf resorts, in Southern Europe, there's only so many places you can go to in Europe right now and go on those sites for holidays, because of the time of year and get the warm weather, and there are only so many people and certain types of people can really afford those types of holidays. So really, I think that I know that there were kind of people that are heavily involved in football that were there the week before. Like, I don't think it's something that's off the radar for anyone. I imagine it's the type of place where you go and you would have the likes of football agents and, you know, middlemen and owners and chairmen and things like that, you know, just ex-players, all those people that, you know, probably football's chattering classes, that some of which may have a relationship with journalists, some of which may have a relationship with the Mail. And similarly, you know, the people that might be going, members of the public that might be going there, again, like to be switched on to sport, because I think at this time of year, you're probably going there not for a family holiday, but for a golfing holiday or something like that, or to use the luxury kind of campus and the gyms they've got there and the aquatic centre and just that area. So, like, I don't think it's that much of a surprise that it got back to someone over here, that it came out. And I think that, you know, I don't think you can necessarily trace it back to a player. It might have come from a player, or it might have come from a player and it's told his agent or things like that. Someone like that might have gone to the Mail. But there is a very believable scenario here where this wasn't someone from within the camp that's kind of leaked this. And I think probably what backs that up a little bit is Everton isn't and hasn't been a very leaky place for a while. Yeah, not a lot tends to come out. Look, I think we all see Dyche from afar. And I think we can all tell, there are times when, sometimes his jokes don't come across particularly. You know, the amount of times I've sat at a press conference and he said a joke, and because no one's laughed, he's then had to go back and say, that was a joke, by the way.
Yeah.
And it's like, just the room just hasn't read it. It's like, awkward. I think he has
It was like the Dan Juma thing, wasn't it? When, like, he flew from Manchester to Liverpool or something, wasn't it? And everyone thought it was real for a while.
The aggregators are there and all that, the sites are just there showing it and things like that. I think he's that type of personality, and obviously these players been in close proximity for him.
Is that Dyche's fault, or is that the people like the media, you guys? Like, I'm not blaming you. I'm just saying. Is he too deadpan for his own good?
Sometimes I think that. I think where the misalignment. I'm turning. Sorry, I just
swapped. I'm editing that. You're watching that live.
I turned.
You're covering Everton, does see it.
We do apologise. You can tell Joe was really stressed.
Like, I kind of. The reason I swore then was because I could just feel myself turning. People have mentioned it. I'm spending so much time with Sean Dyche, and his vocabulary is just seeking into mine. And I was about to talk about the misalignment of perception, and I could just feel myself just going down that wormhole. But I think that perhaps there's a recognition. I think a failure to recognise sometimes, and this goes from both sides, from the press and from Dyche, that everybody's working and people are under different types of pressure at different parts of times. There's certainly things like perhaps more. Yeah, football media is very difficult in context, but so much of it happens in front of the camera, and then there's an absolute bun fight to kind of get the information out there, to interpret it, to analyze it. And I think for so many of the people in the room that are there, whilst they're closest to what's going on, they're often the last people to get anything out, because so much of it is live these days. So someone sitting, you know, in an office or in a, you know, or their home can immediately get something out there, whereas whether people that are asking the questions like myself, it takes it, because you've got to go through, are you there, and yeah, things like that. And I think sometimes that isn't really lined up very often, so perhaps it might be a joke that he's tried to slip in, thinking that we're more perceptive to that than we are, when really we're getting our heads down trying to read into what he's saying so we can ask the next question. But like, you know, I think that we've seen that his sense of humor is one that isn't always, you know, possible to read straight off the bat.
Is that because of Everton's situation though as well? We're not in a good situation. You know, you see other managers with teams performing well.
Even when things are going well, I think that's just personalities. Okay. You know, I don't think that. Look, I mean, I think that I think that an atmosphere is light in a room might be more willing to take a joke when things aren't as bad as they have been recently. But I think that these things still happen when they were going four games win, when they hadn't lost away from Merseyside in months, when, you know, just after Bournemouth and you know, when they secure survival, or after Brighton, when we have one of the biggest away wins in modern history, for so many reasons. So I don't think it's necessarily anybody's fault, and I don't think it's necessarily anybody's intention. But I think for any of them who kind of watches Sean Dyche's press conferences, I think we can all see that there have been instances where perhaps a joke hasn't quite landed as maybe he thought it was, or on the flip side, you know, a kind of a light-hearted question from someone that has not landed right with him, and there's just that little bit of a jarring or a little bit of friction. And I think with that in mind, I think it's very, very easy to see how something could, an innocent joke could be misinterpreted, or just spark a little bit of surprise or reaction, you know, in that split second that it sounds like this happened in.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I think it's, well, it's like in that situation, and maybe the same thing with this situation, it's like know your audience sort of thing. Like Joe said, if you want to make wise cracks, like while everyone's typing away, not really listening to what you've got to say, but sort of, you know, getting it dialed so they can get it shared, it is one way. And in this situation, it's, if you're going to, I don't know what the exact terminology was, if you're going to aim a jocular slap at someone, don't do it to a lad who has not played any football recently and has found himself the fourth choice right back. And he might just be a bit annoyed and a bit fed up at the moment. Like, that feels like a bad target. You know, maybe just don't do it at all. You know, obviously, you know, don't put your hands on people in that situation anyway, but, you know, if you're going to do it to someone, don't do it to someone who might be a little bit annoyed at you anyway. Might be a little bit miffed and feeling a little bit down about the whole thing, because it might not go necessarily well. Because, you know, Patterson is, you know, you put yourself in his position. You know, he arrived at the football club and it felt like he was going to be the successor to Coleman. He was going to, you know, after that first full season under Lampard, when he came in, had, you know, great start, had a great game against Diaz in that derby, and I think we all thought, right, here we go, we've cracked this right back position now for a long time. It, you know, his stock has just fallen and fallen and fallen, to the point now where he's behind Seamus Coleman, behind Ashley Young, behind Ben Godfrey in the pecking order. So maybe, you know, again, we don't know what happened, so I'm not going to sit here and say maybe he shouldn't have lashed out, because we don't really know if he lashed out or it was just a, you know, a case of him getting up and being a bit annoyed. But like I said, just maybe think a little bit more about your targets, in inverted commas, when you do this sort of thing.
Yeah, I don't think anyone lashed out or anything like that. But obviously, you know, I think, well, it's a situation over it being Patterson as well. It's just, you see those stocks fall. It feels like that actually stocks falling for not his own fault as well. Like, so we don't see what goes on in the training pitches. But he has had runs in the team where he's done all right. Yeah. And then it's injuries have held him back. You know, he has had a few injury problems. That, you know, again, you mentioned that Derby, he got injured after it. And it just felt like such a shame because it felt like he made real steps forward at that point. I think there's obviously a talented player in there because Bayern Munich were looking at him in January. Mm. I am baffled as to how he's ended up not getting any minutes in the past few months. Mm. Like, it really does surprise me. I think Ben Godfrey, you know, has many talents. I'm not sure that right back is the position that's best suited for him, and I'm not sure that he's backed that up in his performances, certainly at key moments in recent games. So to see Ben Godfrey turn out at Old Trafford at right back just felt like a little bit of a surprise. To see him finish the game when Everton were chasing it from half an hour inwards, you know, and you thought, well, an obvious thing to do might be to bring on a more, this might be the time that you do bring on a more attacker-minded right back, then he didn't. You know, I have a lot of sympathy for Patterson, and I don't think there's any anger from his camp in relation to this either. I think, to be honest, I think it's, if anything, it's more just embarrassment, really. I don't think from his perspective that any of this, what he wanted any of this to come out or anything like that, I think.
Well, it sounded like it was the group of players that reacted.
I think it might have been people on his behalf as much as anything else. Yeah. But, you know, again, look, I think they haven't won a league game in 11 games. They know they're in a relegation battle. They've had every opportunity to pull themselves away from, regardless of point deduction from what that might hold. You know, we've written, you know, thousands of words of the missed opportunities that, you know, were wasted against Palace, against Brighton, and against West Ham. You know, pick up 7 more points in those 3 games, which they probably should have done, or, you know, at least 4. At least 4 more points from those 2 games, and all of a sudden you could take another potentially take another 6 off, and they're still clear of Luton, and even further clear of Forest if they get a reduction, which is, you know, widely anticipated. So that dressing room probably isn't going to be the easiest place in the world. Wouldn't have been the easiest place we're going into this. Yeah, this break, as we've said, I think it's a good thing for them. And you know what? Something like this might have actually helped clear the air or something like that. Maybe there might have been a little bit of tension and this just diffused everything. Like I say, everything from the training ground after the following day, everything looked positive. It still took a while for this to come out. As I say, I don't think it's as big a deal as we perhaps first feared when we first saw the story. That isn't to say that, yeah, there is a potential for it to happen, but like, it's probably one of those ones that, like Matt says, we look back at the end of the season and we'll be able to interpret with the benefit of hindsight, a little bit like Decore, January of last year, when it kind of emerged, he'd had a bit of a falling out with Lampard and was training by himself. But I think at the time, Decore wasn't an obvious solution that, you know, to Everton's problems. It took Dyche coming in, bringing him into the first team, playing him in a system that allowed him to kind of have the freedom to have an impact and affect games in the way that he did. And obviously, probably no more important player than Abdoulaye Doucouré to Everton's side in the last 12 months. But, you know, it was very difficult to really know what the gist of that all was last January. And it's only really, looking back on it now, we can see the turning point. I don't think this will be a turning point by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, that was it with Doucouré, wasn't it? Like, I remember the City away game when he sat on the ball, yeah. And everyone, because we don't get to see behind the scenes all the time, we don't really get to see what, you know, the fallout with Lampard or whatever it was. We sort of take these moments and little snapshots we get from, we see them on the pitch or what we read in the press, and maybe we're all guilty of just blowing them up to bigger than what we are. And I think that Doucouré thing in the warm-up, we were like, oh, get him gone. How dare he sit on the ball in the warm-up? But it's probably just a player who's fed up with his lot at the moment, fed up with the manager, and just, you know, just showed that for a split second in that incident. And maybe it doesn't mean we need to chase him out the football club. And maybe because Patterson reacted in this instance, or players reacted in this instance, we have to consider it a huge, you know, divide in the camp and this crisis and chaos necessarily. Maybe it's just, you know, they've been out for a meal, maybe they've had a couple of drinks at the end of the week, and it's all just got a little bit heated for a split second, and that's it. And like Joe said, a bit like Joe swearing before, actually, maybe it just diffuses the whole thing a little bit, it makes us all calm down and relax.
I mean, what you say, with the international break in the next fortnight and with the way that results have helped, And yeah, the fact that we'll probably know what's happened to Forrest before Everton kick a ball again. I'm not sure if we'll know what's happened to Everton. Obviously, haven't had their hearing yet. So, although we will have the accounts by the time, by that point, I should feel silly by Newcastle anyway. So we'll have a rough idea where things are heading. Yeah, I think if anything that's going to happen, it's just a good time for it to happen. And hopefully there won't be any lingering impact. But we'll have to wait and see.
Be funny if Patterson set up a trainer with like a neck brace on, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Up in Scotland.
Yeah. I mean, that definitely would break the ice.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Obviously, that's a joke. Yeah.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Everton retain against Bournemouth in a couple of weeks, probably entering the most important part of the season. It's important that Dyche retains, you know, the support of the players, isn't it?
Oh, massively so. I don't think this means that he necessarily hasn't got the support of the players by any means. Like, you know, like Joe said, I don't think... Let's use an example. Manchester United, over the past 2 or 3 years, it feels like every time they have a bad result or something goes on, you hear about it, don't you, straight away in the press, because there are so many leaks in that dressing room and so many players who are willing to speak to reporters because they want to get their side of it out. And it doesn't really feel like that's the case with Everton at the moment. Maybe in the past before Dyche came in, it was that. But by and large, it feels like a pretty United camp. The message seems to be quite consistent whenever they speak after the game. How much you can read into that, you don't know. But you know, it doesn't strike me, from what little we see in public and what we hear in public, of players being discontented with the situation or discontented with the manager. That's not to say that if we lose the next two games, that things might change, or if we get hit with another points deduction before those games, things might change again. But I think actually quite surprisingly so. This feels quite surprisingly United, given the fact that we've had all these things thrown at us this season. But I think it's one of those things that is quite fragile, isn't it? I think trying to maintain that, steering through these choppy waters of relegation battles is going to be difficult for the manager, but I still think it's there just about.
Well, the only way to hit back at everything that's happened, obviously over the weekend, and what could come in the next 2 weeks, is just win against Bournemouth, and that'll just put everything to bed, won't it?
Yeah. Winning games is mad. It does help,
like,
doesn't it?
Like, that's it.
Yeah, it's... If we go and beat Bournemouth, then all of a sudden, like, everything's just so much better, isn't it? Like, you know, we probably don't speak about anything to do with this ever again. Everton are probably, 4 or 5 points clear of the relegation zone. Well, no, even more than that, wouldn't it, based on the time they kick off. And all of a sudden, everyone feels a lot better, a lot more relaxed about things. So, yeah, like, as much as we talk about all this stuff around the football club and around the players, through the context of a win, or a win and a draw, or a free game unbeaten run, these things look completely different. And I think it's just the fact that we're all a bit tired and we're fed up with this football team just not winning football matches.
Just a reminder to keep getting your questions in and your opinions in the comments section. Joe, we've had one in from Kenneth Lowy on YouTube. It says, never mind the slap, what about an underperforming team getting a luxury holiday in the sun? Second part to his point is, also, Ellis Sims has almost got Coventry into the semi-final FA Cup by himself, and here we are with no goals.
Yeah, two interesting points. In terms of the break, look, I mean, I don't think it's particularly controversial to say the world in which these players live and everything they do is in luxury. Mm. You know, Finch Farm is luxury. Like, I think it makes sense for them to go away. I think it was a good opportunity. I was speaking to Michael Ball about this morning, and he was saying that he's been on these camps before, and they're really, really good for a couple of reasons. Obviously, one, it gives you an opportunity to carry on training, to keep your fitness, but it's actually everything around it that's better. He says that, you know, they can be really, I mean, ironic given what we've just been talking about, really good for team bonding. He said that, you know, obviously what you do on something like this is you spend so much more time with your teammates and with your players. Like, you know, you can get around the goal together, or you have a drink after a session, because it's all you together. And I think that people perhaps misperceive that sometimes from what it's like on a day-to-day basis of being a footballer. You know, really a lot of them, you know, they'll go to training, do a couple of hours, but they'll go to work, and then they'll get in their car and they'll drive off home or something like that. So you don't necessarily have a lot of that kind of, you know, communal style, like friendships and relationships, chances to kind of get to know each other just that little bit better. And it's why pre-season tours are so good, because you're almost forced into a situation where, you know, you've got to kind of, like, you know, dedicate more time to each other and, you know, build personal relationships, which are good. And also he thought it was a good opportunity for a psychological break. That's something that I've written a lot about. Like, I think that, you know, this group of players, you know, I've written a piece today on some positives from this season, because I think that there are a lot of reasons to be genuinely concerned about it with Everton at the moment. Huge reasons, but I think, you know, there are some positives that are easy to miss when you're in the midst of where we are at the minute. Like, 11 games without a win in the league isn't good enough. You know, being on the brink of a relegation fight for a third year in a row isn't good enough. But I think when you look at these players, this is a group of players that should have been 14, 9 points clear of a relegation battle. It's an achievement that they've been able to go 11 points. This side has gone 11 games in the league without a win and been hit with a -6 points deduction. It's still 3 points clear of the relegation zone. You know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, got a laugh at that. I don't know what to say.
Yeah. Like, I know we can talk about things from a club perspective, from a playing group perspective, not only is that actually pretty impressive, but it's incredibly impressive when you compare that to where this side has been for the last 2 years. And it's even more so when you think that, you know, it's been two years of cost cutting. So this squad is the weakest it's been in the last 3 years, and yet look at how it's performing in contrast to those other ones and against such incredible odds. That doesn't mean that, you know, everything that's happened in the last 11 games is excusable. Doesn't mean mistakes haven't been made. Doesn't mean that players don't need to improve their performances. They're, you know, at both ends of the pitch. Of course they do. And, you know, maybe they do need some hard truths, but they also probably need a little bit of love and a bit of opportunity to reflect. And I think that, by going away, it just takes them completely out the glare of the media spotlight and everything else. It just gives them a little chance to just almost just have a breather and just go, right, this is where we're at. And I think that's really important. I think it's important that they did it this week, because it meant they could go away together as a whole squad, as opposed to the next fortnight, when obviously you've got people all over the world playing international fixtures. So I think it was a really good thing. I understand the commenters' point, but I think this was the most sensible thing to do at this time. I think it was the best use of time. Because, again, like, if you let that group of players go off for a week of their own holidays now, then, like, what headspace do they have that break in if they're going off by themselves and with their families? And what it then means is, for some of those players, that, you know, you're not seeing them for 3 weeks again. So at a time when they're going to be so fragile, really, you want to carry on working with them and keeping them all together as much as possible. So,
just on the Sims point there.
The Sims points are really, it's just, oh, go on.
No, I was just going to say, someone countered Kenneth's point by saying, or Michael Barnes on YouTube has said, Sims is a 1-4 striking in the Championship, not good enough for the Prem. So, two different commenters there, two different opinions.
I mean, Sims is doing exactly what he did at the back end of the calendar year of 2022, where he's making Everton's first team look foolish. You know, he has a habit of doing that. It's no different to when he was on loan at Sunderland, and, you know, he was scoring goals, not quite for fun, but he was doing well in a Sunderland team that was doing well in the Championship. And it was at a time when Calvert-Lewin was struggling with injury and Everton was struggling to score under Lampard. So they brought him back at the end of the year, the first day of the January transfer window, they brought him back. Now, you know, that was whether or not it was a mistake to bring him back, I don't know. It probably wasn't the best thing for the player. I don't think Lampard thought that Sims was a player that he could do a big job. I think it was almost a bit of a PR move, bringing Sims back from Sunderland, because it had become embarrassing that he was scoring so many goals. So it was like, well, if they bring him in, one, it's an extra body in the squad. Two, there's a chance he comes in, and he did get chances. Mm. Yeah, chance to come in, is that might solve the problem. But I think, you know, very deep into January, the belief in that club was still that they would find a striker. So I don't think he was brought back as the answer. I think he was brought back as, at best, you know, a potential side solution. Look, you know, he got chances in a side that was in a relegation battle and which, you know, struggled to create chances. And under a manager that, obviously, you know, we've spoken a lot about Dyche's use of substitutions, whether they're right or wrong, one thing that they don't, whilst I think his track record suggests that his methods have worked to get good results for Everton, or the results that have mattered for Everton, what they're probably not great for is player development. So giving those players who come onto the pitch the opportunity to kind of change the way in which their seasons are going. Look, Sims started at Anfield, started at Old Trafford. Anfield was a difficult one. It got very isolated now. Obviously, it was against Liverpool. It was always difficult. It was early in Dyche's tenure. Old Trafford was a big missed opportunity for him. I mean, Everton lost 2-0 in that game, and really, it was a game of Jordan Pickford versus Manchester United. I remember watching it, and it could so easily have been 7 or 8 that game.
You missed a massive chance early in the game.
Yeah. 0-0, Sims. Yeah. And I don't know how Sean Dyche works internally, but there's a chance at Old Trafford, and it wasn't a glorious opportunity, but it was one that it was a chance to score a goal and put Everton 1-0 up. And yeah, who knows what they've done to what was then as it is now and has been for so long, a very fragile Manchester United side at Old Trafford, and he missed that. And even at the moment, at the time, it felt a bit like a big miss. And it's similar, like I kind of draw comparisons to Tom Cannon against Stade Lyonnais. I mean, I know this is a niche reference, but in that friendly game at the end of the Alpine pre-season, Cannon started in that game and he had a similar opportunity where you're not saying it's a bad miss, but what it is a missed opportunity to score and to maybe catch Dyche's eye. And just now, both of them were sold for financial reasons. I think Sims probably would have gone anyway. I think, sure, I'd like to believe, because the Tom Cannon sale still hurts me. Like I like to believe that people at that club would have given him a more of an opportunity if Everton were in a better situation, both financially and playing with less pressure on the pitch. We'll never know. I like Tom Cannon a lot. I certainly think he's a good Championship goal scorer. And at the minute, Everton don't even have a lot of that, do they? I mean, that is very close to Everton's level, top end of the Championship. It's a side that nearly got relegated twice. So, it's galling, it's hard to watch. Really pleased for Sims. Loved it when he scored that goal at Stamford Bridge. One of the highlights of last season. Brilliant moment for him. Made up for him. Made up for the fans who got to watch it. It was fantastic. I understand his sale. I think he probably needed this himself for his own career. I don't think he would have necessarily been the solution under Dyche. I think they still start with Dominic Calvert-Lewin more often than not. I think they still go out and sign Beto or somebody like Beto. So I still think he's at best for a choice. I don't think that's good for him and his development. And I think that he's someone that probably thrives off having believing there's confidence in him. And Coventry have persevered with him during dry spells this season, and they've given him opportunities to carry on, make a name for himself. And now he's showing that he's got 10 goals in the past 4 weeks, and obviously against all types of different opposition. You know, three of them might have been against Maidstone, and you go, all right, non-league opposition. But then obviously two of them are against a side that have beaten Everton twice this season in the Premier League. So, you know, I don't see it as a missed opportunity. I see it as a shame, and I think it's probably something that just, it looks bad. The optics of it look bad from an Everton perspective. I mean, they've let someone go who's scoring goals for fun in the league below. But I don't think Sims was likely to be the solution to Everton's problems this season.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Moving on to the weekend results then, Matt. Not a bad set of results for Everton, really. Burnley 2, Brentford 1, Luton 1, Forest 1. Couldn't have asked for any better, really, you would have thought.
Well, yeah, and coupled with the mad game on Wednesday as well, when obviously Luton had a bit of a meltdown in the second half there. That was, it's gone. But you know what, on Saturday, I convinced myself that, right, whatever the results are, I'm going to tell myself that this is the best result for Everton. Because it was one of them where you sort of looked at it and you thought, you could have made a case for wanting Luton to win, you could have made a case for wanting Forest to win, you could have made a case for a draw. And then exactly the same situation in the Burnley-Brentford game. You know, if Burnley lose that, they are out of the picture completely. Maybe there's a sliver of hope. I know Joe was messaging me on Saturday terrified about Vincent Kompany's lads resurging, but I think they're not 9 points behind us, are they? They'll get 9 more points all season, to be honest. But yeah, it's just, we keep getting these. It's been a while, I think, since we've had a weekend where I've looked at it and thought, they are bad results for us. And that is because by and large, the teams at the bottom are at the bottom because they're not very good teams and they don't win matches very often. So it probably hurts a bit more when they do get those big results and they surge up the table a little bit. But by and large, we're going to keep kind of getting away with it because teams are bad down there. You know, Luton are one of those sides. I sort of look at it and think, every time I watch them, I feel like there's something there with these. They are, they have got attributes and parts of a functional football team, but they also seem to lose every week.
Well, just on that then, just going back to Joe's point when he said about Everton have had 6 points taken off them this season, points deduction, and they haven't won in 11 games. Is it just because the league's so poor?
Oh, yeah.
Down there? Is
yeah.
That, like, if like a Leicester or a Leeds were still in this league, like, we'd probably be in the relegation zone, wouldn't we?
Oh, massively so, yeah. I'd never escape that. And as much as one of the stuff that Joe said is still relevant about this team and where they should be and all that, we have got lucky. We've got massively lucky that there's all these things that have happened to us in a season where you've probably got the three worst promoted teams maybe ever in the history of the Premier League. You know, you look at, you know, I mean, as a collective there, because obviously you've got Derby, we were awful, we've got some other ones that have come up and just completely tanked. But as a trio, it's hard to think of three teams that have come up and looked less ready for the top flight. So we have got really lucky, but we are still down there. And you know, the frustrating thing, like Joe said, you know, I think you've summed it up so well in the last few weeks where you've said that I think Everton at times this season can look at external factors and go, everyone's out to get us here, things are going against us, how do we stop this, you know, all these things going against us and conspiring against us. But the three games we had before the international break, it was one of them where it's like, that's pretty much our fault. We had all those games, maybe not United to a degree, but we had a good chance to get a result at United. But Brighton, we had it in the palm of our hands. West Ham, we had it in the palm of our hands, and we threw it away. So we could be well clear, but yeah, we keep getting away with it with the results. I'm sure there'll be a couple of teams down there who do pick up towards the end of the season. It always tends to be the way, doesn't it? But hopefully it's us, or hopefully we've got enough of a gap between those sides and us that it doesn't really matter. But it's hard to even plot your way out of it, isn't it? Because we don't know how many points we're going to be on by the end of this week. We don't know how many points Forest are going to be on by the end of this week. How many points we're going to be on by the end of our appeal for the second charge, when the Forest appeal with theirs. So it's just about getting that, you know, it's a very obvious point to make, but it's about getting as many points as possible so that when we do potentially get hit again, that we're still thinking, right, we're still okay here. We still got a big enough gap.
But just on that then, for me, it was a particularly bad result for Forest with what's around the corner for them.
Yeah.
Winning the game and then to end up drawing the game, obviously they could have lost it, so it could have been a lot worse. But the fact that they're more than likely to get at least, what, 6 points taken off them now, you know, they've missed a chance there to at least pull away from, or get a buffer between them and Luton, haven't they?
Yeah, and I think from what I've seen of them, and I don't watch them every week or follow what the manager says every week, but it feels like they are slipping into that sort of mindset that I said before about everything's against us, and they are starting to feel very sorry for themselves. You know, if you look at the game against Liverpool, where a bad decision goes against them, but there's 2 minutes of football before they concede that late goal, and then they've got Clattenburg bizarrely coming out to make it. You know, that well, I mean, what's that like? That in itself is a wild move, isn't it? That going and getting him, in a way, feels like a football club that's just kind of completely run out of ideas and again, a little bit desperate. And I don't know if the deduction for them will galvanise them in a way it maybe did us, or just send them further down into that spiral. Obviously, they've changed the manager. It's not really worked, has it? Mm. And I think the thing with them as well is that maybe where it was easy for Dice to kind of bring everybody together at a time when Everton were hit with adversity, their squad's so massive and it's probably got so many cliques in it and so many people that were annoyed about not playing matches or weren't happy with things, that can you bring together a squad of 40 players? You know, is that doable? If you hit with a deduction, I imagine it'll be easier for them to have factions of that squad to slip into mindsets that we all feared would happen with Everton, where it was a case of, oh, this has got nothing to do with us. So I think he has got a tough job on his hands there. And it's going to affect teams in different ways, isn't it? You know, a points deduction for them might not necessarily yield the same exact pattern that it did for Everton. Their fans might not react in the same way as our fans did. So it's a case of just having to wait and see, because there's absolutely no precedent for it. It's not really something I could get excited about. Forest getting deducted 9 points if it does come through today at some point. But it helps Everton at the end of the day, and that's a good thing. But listen, it's not really the football I want to be enjoying and I want to be watching between now and the end of the season. You know, getting all calculators out, looking out on the Premier League website for statements about points deductions. It's all a little bit sad and boring from my point of view.
Joe, just a line from one of your pieces over the weekend. So it says, Vince and company says his Burnley side is still fueled by belief after holding on to a vital win over Brentford. So was it important that Brentford lost to kind of keep them still in it? Or are you, I mean, kind of, Matt touched upon it a little bit. Are you a little bit worried now Burnley are going to go on a run? And
I'm not seriously worried about them. But what the unknown is the points deductions. And I have absolutely no idea where they're going to go with Forest or where they're going to go with Everton. And I think that how they treat the two of them will have an impact on both clubs' mentalities as well. If there's a perception that one club gets away with it, whereas the other, if Forest... So imagine if Forest came away with two and Everton got another six. And you're thinking, how does this all work out? Obviously, both sides have very unique sets of circumstances and explanations for what they've gone through. And we don't know if they're going to be punished accordingly. I think it was a good thing for Everton that Forest didn't hold on to that win, because then obviously what it does do is it would give them a two-point head start on Everton for anything that does follow. Luton failing to beat Bournemouth was the big one, because if they were sat there on 25 points with us all and we were both there thinking, well, the starting point for any penalty for Forest and Everton is probably going to be, the starting point is going to be six, and it might go up or down either way. All of a sudden you could be in a situation where you're playing two or three games, you've got to find two or three games to catch up with Luton. I think two things are important to remember is, one, that out of Everton, Forest and Luton, only one of those three sides would go down, unless Burnley do something amazing. Like, it's not any two from those three, it's one from those three. Obviously, Brentford in there again, but I do kind of think that Brentford will... They've had a lot of injuries. I think they've got goals in that side, and I think that the points deductions, which feel inevitable for both Everton and Forest, would probably just skew that a little bit and just help them push clear. Yeah, Luton not winning that game against Bournemouth, which is absolutely huge, because they were sat level on points. Like, Luton now, for everything that we're saying about how we're worried about points deductions, things like that, Luton's next four games, three of them are away at Tottenham, away at Arsenal, and away at City. I mean, even if Everton, say Everton got a minus three, we're on the same point, it'd be above them on goal difference. Now, Luton play Bournemouth at home in between all those games, but you feel like you're 3 points, maybe 4 points maximum for them, and then that would be a very, very good return for them. I feel that Everton will still have it in their own hands to stay above them. Obviously, Forest is the other unknown. But, I mean, those two games when we come back are just so interesting, really, I think, because Bournemouth and Newcastle are both sides that I think are they are beatable. I think they're winnable games for an Everton side that's better on the road as well. We've had a 3-week break as well. We'll be playing against sides whose seasons are pretty much over now. I think Bournemouth aren't going to qualify for Europe. They're not going to end up in a relegation battle. Newcastle, it feels like they're heading towards that direction. Obviously, there's a chance they can push for Europa Conference League, but they look like a squad that just needs summer now just to kind of rebuild and reflect on what it is that they're trying to achieve there. Everton could easily go and get 4 points on those trip on the road, and they get that even with the points deduction with the Luton games and the fact that Forest like to get a deduction. Then, if they went and got 4 points from those two games on the road, you think they're probably halfway there. Yeah. They could easily go and lose both, and that's the only nerves I have with things like the Patson and Dyche since the weekend. I imagine that everything's a bit fine, and when they come back to training at Finch Farm, everything's going to be fine. But you just worry that there will be some tension there because of the results, because of the pressure, and will cracks emerge if 11 without a win turns to 12 win, turns to 13 without a win, you had a points deduction and might be sitting in a relegation zone, or they might have to be playing catch up with Luton, which I think they probably would do, but would take time. Burnley don't necessarily scare me that much, but because we don't know, like, I think it's about 9 points to Burnley, but obviously if Everton were to get hit with a six, then all of a sudden, does that give Burnley a bit of belief? Does it hurt Everton? If it turns into any, one from three to any two from four, it becomes a little bit harder. I mean, look, Everton will have the best opportunity they could possibly hope for to silence any attempt to come back from Burnley, and that is the next game at Goodison Park in mid-April. I mean, that is just a huge game for so many reasons. So, I think Burnley struggled to win even with 10 men against a Brentford side that's struggling the other day. They played, 80 minutes of that game with 10 men. And Burnley only just saw it over the line. So I don't really think that we're going to see anything major from Burnley. But I think that this time, in what we're on now, the 18th of March, aren't they? So they play Burnley on what? They play Burnley on the 6th. And then I think the cut-off point for any resolution for Everton's case is April the 8th. So probably by Burnley, I think we probably know earlier, but by Burnley, we probably know what the situation with Everton Forest points deductions are.
Even with any appeals, though?
Well, no, the appeals go for weeks, of course. But we'll know what the starting point for any... We'll probably know what the worst-case scenario is for both sides, because they'll probably have them. And then, so we'll know whatever they're working with, and then we'll have that Burnley game, and that Burnley game feels like it'll be a big opportunity to deal with a lot of issues for Everton, perhaps finally get a win for the home fans again, finally end the winless run if it isn't over by then already, finally get a bit of momentum, finally kind of put a final nail in Burnley's coffin for relegation. They just got to make sure that they get there as strong as possible. They've got to beat them. So,
the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
That Luton game away at Bournemouth, that is surely going to have an impact on them. Because I think it was a hard time just seeing the score 3-0 to them. I was thinking this is going to be their Brighton that we had last year. Do you know the game where you go away from home against a team that are better than you in the league, and you just, like, everything just clicks, and you just go, here we go. We're gonna go on from this now. I'm going to be sound. And what happened in the second half, funny enough, is sort of what I expected us to do at Brighton a year ago, where it all just sort of unravelled. But for it to unravel in the way it did, and the way they conceded the goals, the late goal to lose the game. And I think Edwards afterwards, whenever I've seen him interview this season, even after defeats for them, he's always been quite upbeat and quite positive. He just looked like a man who
it was a killer for them.
Yeah, it was an absolute hammer blow there. And I think to follow that up with the performance and results against Forest, I know they got a late goal, but that's one you'd think that they've got to win that. And all of a sudden, I think them as a football club would feel like, right, we've been doing loads of stuff right here, and then we've got this spell of games where we've got Bournemouth, where we've got Forest, and we'll pick up points there to go with the performances that have been quite decent recently. And for it to unravel like it did, I feel like that's going to take some getting over for them, especially now where they've been looking into those fixtures, as Joe said, and thinking, where's the next point coming from for us? So I think that'll be tough for them to get over. But obviously it's going to be interesting to see how Forest respond to what could potentially happen today.
Yeah, and it's so frustrating, isn't it, that it's highly likely this season, the fight for survival is going to be decided off the pitch rather than on it. So we're expecting some sort of decision on Forest certainly this week. I think you've suggested that we might even get it as early as today. But one of your headlines here, which I'll just read out: key days ahead as Premier League season threatens to descend into chaos. And regardless of the whole situation, whether you can blame Everton, you can blame the Premier League, it is absolute chaos, isn't it? It's just not what we want as football fans.
Yeah, it does feel like a complete farce, doesn't it? I think that on the Forest, the people a lot closer to the Forest case than us seem convinced it's going to be very soon, and possibly even today as we speak on Monday, which, is far quicker than it would have been for either Everton or the appeal. So I'm a bit surprised that people are so convinced it's going to be today, but obviously they have their own sources and would be much closer to that situation. I think there's probably a recognition from the Premier League that things need to be quicker this time round because of the cases and the end of the season approaching. So, yeah, I mean, I wrote that today, basically, we got Premier League's going to go 2 weeks without a ball being kicked, but the battle for the bottom of the Premier League table is going to continue at some pace, and it's over to the lawyers. The KCs KCs arguing behind closed doors are going to define the fight, where everyone is for the rest of the season, and that doesn't really feel right. And I think that we can all agree that regulation is needed in football, and clubs that breach the financial parameters, they've signed up for them, they know what the rules are, they have to live with the consequences if they break them. But surely it makes more sense for these things to be done in a closed season, really. And then you either, whether you start a season on minus points or you have to take it off retrospectively, there isn't there isn't a perfect solution for this. There isn't a happy scenario which is good for football fans if, you know, things are decided off you know, if footballing matters are heavily influenced by matters off the pitch. But I guess we all accept that there's a need for proper regulation of football clubs and their spending. So you're gonna have to deal with it one way or another. But what I think we could probably all agree with is that this isn't a happy solution for all these things. Whatever we've been going through this season, what we're going to go through in the next few weeks.
Question here from James Bliss on Facebook for you, Joe. Any thoughts on whether both Everton's and Forest's imminent points deduction will be deferred until next season on the basis that you shouldn't receive multiple points deductions in the same season for different counting periods? I mean, we've discussed this at length, haven't we?
But yeah, I mean, everything is being geared up for punishments to happen in the same season. So it would take a very big change of protocol to emerge from these for that to be the case. I think he makes a good point in a sense that you would think that if Evans was to be deferred, then it probably has to be the same decision for both, because this is for the same, the breaches that are being alleged and heard at the minute are for the same financial year, because obviously Evans' first one was for the year before that. So if they were both to be, if one was to be deferred, it would make sense for both of them to be deferred. But everything is being geared up. The rule changes in March 2023 were all designed. You know, the bringing forward of the deadlines for the accounting, for the dates by which the PSR calculations were due to be submitted, which was 31st of December of last year. That was all done with this in mind, that the punishment's happening this season. So I think it would be a very strange one if that was that. Or I think it would be a big surprise. I'm not saying it couldn't happen, but I think it would be a big surprise. It would go against everything that the rules are currently designed to do. I think also just in relation to the two punishments in one season, it's probably worth remembering that the Premier League wanted to deal with Evans' first case last season. You know, after they obviously they charged, I think in March, they wanted to, from the league's perspective, they wanted that to be done with last season. But really, because of the time frames, is what they brought forward this year. I think it was basically said it'd be impossible to have a fair argument over this within the remainder of that season. So that's why it's kind of been brought back. So it's not, I mean, it's a product of the Premier League rules, but it wasn't Premier League's intention for there to be two punishments in the same season for one club for two different accounting periods. But we are in that situation, and unless there's a big change of heart behind closed doors, and there's nothing currently pointing to suggest a deferred punishment.
I mean, the table is obviously going to change, you know, back before we kick a ball, isn't it? So that's just a frustration in itself, but it might look good if Forest have got a points deduction.
Yeah, again, like, it's one of them. Like, it is good for us, but it's like, you know, like Joe said, the battle of the KCs, it's hard to... It's not like you're watching a match and Forest lose and you can be like, you can take some small bit of joy from it. Is it just going to be like a statement there? It's like, oh, there we go. It's, you know, Everton haven't done anything, have they? Necessarily, it's a merit being further away. But yeah, it's hard to find a solution, but maybe like a manager battle royale in a Portuguese restaurant or something could be the way to go about it, to decide who stays up. I'd fancy Dice chances against maybe not against company, but anyone else, certainly.
What about those videos that you see online now where it's like, slap championships? You've seen them?
Who can take the most face slaps?
Three rounds, see who goes down first.
I mean, it feels like it's been about 2.5 years of non-stop slaps. It'd be nice for some peace, wouldn't it?
It will. Well, we're close to an hour and I think we've got through everything that we wanted to get through, so we'll probably leave it there. But Joe, is there anything that you want to just say, what's coming up? Obviously, Forest, you know, if that's not today, it's going to be this week, but you're going to be right there to report that on that, aren't you?
Well, I mean, if it happens today or tomorrow, it will be. I've got a few days off.
Oh, yeah.
I think stay tuned is probably the one. Obviously, we're expecting a Forest decision. The Everton hearing is going to take place this month, so that's coming up. I think that we should all be alive to a possible conclusion of the takeover scenario. I think that things are moving towards a head on that. What that will be, I don't know. But, you know, I think coming towards the end of this month, obviously 777 will review things before they consider making their next loan instalment, which should be at the end of the month. And I think it's, you know, hard to see how the face-to-face meeting couldn't have been a big step towards a conclusion one way or the other. So that's upcoming. So I think it's still going to be busy these next few weeks. Obviously, you know what, I think probably end on a slightly positive note. I wrote a piece this morning on just trying to find some positives from Everton's season, because I think there are genuinely some positives from the season. I think, you know, it's easy to get caught. Yeah, the more important things are negative and they're concerning and they're worried and they cause legitimate worries, relegation, takeover, those type of things. But, you know, especially when you compare it to the last two seasons, there are things that we can take as progress this season. One of them we'll get to see, hopefully get to see Jared Bradford on the pitch in an England shirt. Yeah, I think the club can take, you know, albeit he joined later, I think the club and the fan base could all take some pride in that. And I think that's a moment that we should enjoy. And then, yeah, just a few other bits and pieces in there. Just have a look at the piece. Let me know what your thoughts are, because, you know, this 3-week break does give an opportunity for some pause for reflection. And as difficult as it has been and things are going to continue to be, I think it's a little bit of perspective and a little bit of a look at some reasons to be a little bit more optimistic. Yeah, might be worth just doing, because it has been a lot of doom and gloom this season. So.
Absolutely. Matt, anything you want to get off your chest? Anything you want to say before we go?
No, I'm just terrified of Bramthwaite and Onana injuring each other when England play Belgium. Yeah, that feels like it could be very Everton. But in all seriousness, like, you know, Bramthwaite making his England debut against, you know, I do not care about England at all, but like, for that lad to make his England debut potentially against Brazil at Wembley could be absolutely amazing for him, couldn't it? I'd just be looking out for him. But yeah, I can't believe Jerry's not going to come in on his day off and talk about Everton. It's got selfish.
Well, I'm not ruling it out, but I've got 8 days off. You know, like,
eight?
Yeah, so, you know, I... So it depends on what falls and when.
As Everton correspondent, you shouldn't be allowed that many days off. Just too much going on. Too much going on.
I mean, it's felt like that for quite a long, hasn't it? So, you know, got my own winter break and recuperate. Don't play golf, so yeah. No, that bit's gone.
I'm sure it's much deserved, John.
And I can't afford to go to luxury.
golf resorts.
Iberian resorts. So yeah, but still. Cup of tea in the Dobbies and speak with me Dobbies card, I think.
fair enough. Okay, well, for those watching on YouTube, Facebook, for those listening on our podcast channels, please just remember to give us some support, hit the like button, subscribe to our Royal Blue YouTube channel. Also follow us on Facebook, which is Everton FC Liverpool Echo. Send us the feedback, show us your support, leave your comments, feedback, everything positive or negative. Can't even speak today. Joe, what's your Twitter handle so people can send you feedback?
Joe_Thomas18.
Matt, Twitter?
Matt J Football.
Mm. And it's not even Twitter anymore, is it? It's X.
X, yeah.
But people still call it Twitter. And mine is @IanCroll1. Straight to the point. Okay, well, that's all for today's show. I've been Ian Kroll, joined by Joe Thomas and Matt Jones, and this has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.